Call the next case.
Dwight versus Commonwealth, John P. Russell Jr., Appellant Counsel, Gene Murphy, Appellate Counsel.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Russell on behalf of the Appellant Donald Slott. This is an involuntary manslaughter case arising from an accident where Mr. Slott, driving a fully loaded tractor trailer, was attempting to pass a slowly moving vehicle on U.S. 15, a major highway, in a 55-mile-an-hour zone in rural Fluvanna County. As Mr. Slott crested the hill in his tractor trailer, he observed a slow or possibly even stopped vehicle, which was Mr. Nathan, about 500 feet ahead. There being no oncoming traffic and being a straight section of the road, Mr. Slott determined he would try and go around Mr. Nathan. He slowed from 55 to about 35, sounded his air horn in a loud manner for several seconds, and moved to the left-hand lane to go around. Approximately 2 seconds before he turned, Mr. Nagel finally turned on the left-hand signal and abruptly made a left-hand turn directly in front of Mr. Sly's tractor trailer. Mr. Sly's truck hit him square in the side, resulting in Mr. Nagel's death.
But he tried to pass in a no-pass zone, did he not?
Well, the last 50 feet were in a no-passing zone, correct.
And that's not permitted. That's illegal.
It is illegal, yes.
And could the fact finder interpret the horn blast as not simply a precautionary blast, but as an aggressive, get out of my way because I'm coming through blast?
Well, that's what the Court of Appeals said. I failed to determine what the difference is. It's still a warning. A warning is a warning. And if it's whether it's get out of my way because I want to buy or please get out of my way, it's still a warning.
How about get out of my way because if you don't, I'll run over you?
Well, I don't think the law makes the distinction. What the law says is you don't have any degree of care, and even slight. And again, I would compare that to the case recently decided by this court of Colby versus Boyden. In that case, and I think they're really indistinguishable. In that case, it was a civil case, but it was on a standard of gross negligence, not criminal negligence. And in that case, this court, held that when Officer Boyden approached an intersection against a red light, the fact that he momentarily sounded his siren just before entering the intersection was enough to show that he had some degree of care, and that was all that was necessary to take it out of the realm of gross negligence. Well, if it couldn't be gross negligence, then it certainly couldn't be criminal negligence. So if sounding a siren briefly before entering an intersection against a light shows a slight degree of care, then certainly sounding an air horn would show a similar degree of care.
But doesn't everything determined by how you interpret the blast?
How do you know what the... Didn't the officer sound his siren saying, get out of my way, I'm coming through? I don't know why it matters. And the fact that he was trying to warn him, that he was showing he didn't want to hit anybody. But that goes to the horn blast. He also slowed down. It had been argued that there was no evidence that he slowed down, but the evidence is uncontroverted that he did slow. The Commonwealth's own expert in the accident reconstruction testified that he was going approximately, and it was 37.1 mile per hour at the time of the collision, and that he had been going 55 at some point based on the earlier. So he had slowed and was trying to go around. It wasn't a situation where he exhibited no care whatsoever and a total disregard. He did at least exhibited some degree of care. But the error of law that we raise is that the trial court and the Court of Appeals kept misapplying the law of of involuntary manslaughter by considering the size and weight of the vehicle as being such crucial factors. Certainly the size and weight of a vehicle can be an important factor in an involuntary manslaughter case, but there has to be some nexus, some link, some causation between the risk that, the size and weight of the vehicle posed and the cause of the accident.
Doesn't it factor into the degree of conscious and reckless disregard for human life if you're driving an 18-wheeler and you can't maneuver it versus driving a VW Bug and you can maneuver it? How could it not be relevant?
It could be, but there's no evidence that, maneuverability played any factor here. The car turned directly. If he had been driving a passenger car, a normal passenger car, and someone turns left right in front of you with no or little warning, you're not going to be able, there's no evidence that a passenger car could have stopped. There's no evidence that...
Where did the victim T-bone the defendant? Was it in the cab of the truck or was it in the trailer of the truck?
The truck trailer ran into the passenger side door of the victim.
Okay.
So the very front of the truck ran into the passenger side door. Although there wasn't any evidence, I can't imagine that that could not be a fatal accident regardless of the type of vehicle it is.
So a VW Bug would not have had a better opportunity to maneuver away from that T-bone?
With 2 seconds, there wasn't any opportunity to maneuver anything.
1,000, 2,000? There's not enough opportunity to pull the wheel, 1,000, 2,000?
The evidence was that the reaction time is 2 seconds between the time you see the need to stop and the time you can get the brake applied and it can start taking hold. So there just wasn't any time. And furthermore, I think if the Commonwealth is going to argue that the size and weight of the vehicle was a contributing factor and was posed the known risk and was something that takes it out of the realm of negligence and into the realm of criminal negligence, then the Commonwealth was obliged to present proof that the size and weight of the vehicle made a difference. The Commonwealth would have been obliged to have asked their expert, if this had been a passenger car, would they have been able to maneuver or stop in the distance that was allowed? And that was never, there was never any evidence. There was just argument. And I don't believe that in fact, the law is pretty clear that the risks that are posed, what makes it criminal negligence is for a defendant to take action, reckless action, in the face of known risks with probable consequences of death or serious bodily harm. So there are certainly known risks from driving a 77,000-pound vehicle, not being able to stop as quickly, not being able to maneuver as well, and the like. But those risks weren't the risks associated with this accident. The same is true of the no-passing zone. Going over passing in a no-passing zone poses known risks. Those known risks are the fact that there could be oncoming traffic that you can't get out of the way of. But the no-passing zone does not pose a risk of someone making an abrupt left-hand turn without a signal. So that risk isn't linked. There is no causation between going into a no-passing zone and this particular accident, which was caused when Mr. Nagel turned abruptly left without benefit of a signal more than 2 seconds before. So that's the crucial factor here, is what are the known risks and what were the probable consequences? The known risk in this case, the Court of Appeals just assumed that there was a known risk, and this was never even mentioned by the trial court, but the Court of Appeals, in its opinion, says that there was a known risk where that Mr. Sly should have been aware of, that a slowly moving car might make an abrupt left-hand turn with little or no signal. But I would submit that is not a known risk. And furthermore, even if it was a slight risk, The law requires that it be probable, that the probable consequence of you passing someone on the left-hand side in a no-passing zone is that they're going to turn in front of you and it's going to cause their death.
Let me stop you right there, because I'm with you, and your argument makes a lot of sense to me and is bothering as I look through this. But then I came to the realization that there were houses along the left-hand side of this road. Why wouldn't Mr. Sly have anticipated that this person was slowing to make a left-hand turn? And that was a known risk. When you see houses and driveways on the left-hand side of the road, and you're getting ready to go by this person.
But it's a rural area. Yes, they do have driveways and houses. Mr. Sly, in his statement that he gave to the trooper at the scene, stated that there was, and actually the gentleman who was mowing his yard testified at trial, there was someone mowing his yard on the right-hand side, directly beside the victim's car.
Right.
And Mr. Sly had determined in his initial look that he had stopped, the car had stopped to talk to this person. And that's one reason why he decided to go around. But I don't think you can just assume that any car that slows, if they're...
Even though their driveway's on the left-hand side of the highway.
But it's not like a neighborhood, Your Honor. It's still a 55-mile-an-hour
zone. I'm from Southampton County. I mean, I know what these roads look like. And that's why, quite honestly, it's a big... I wonder if somebody's driving a big tractor trailer and you know you're in on a country road where people might be making a left-hand turn. It's not like a highway.
It is. US 15 is a major highway.
Well, even if... Okay. 58, you can call that a highway if you want to. I mean, we call it a road where I come from. But it's just like this road you're talking about here, where it's two lanes. So, you're making this left-hand turn, but there are houses that are on that side. There are driveways on that side. Now, the thing that I find bothersome about this case, once the tractor-trailer gets in that left lane and has committed itself to be in that left lane, if he didn't anticipate this person making a left-hand turn, exactly what happened here is what happens. The person turns in front of you.
And I'm not disputing that it would be negligent. That's not the issue. It's whether it is so wanton and reckless as to show absolutely total disregard for human life.
But let me stop you just for a second. And I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. I understand your argument, I think. But once he commits into that left-hand lane, a person only has to put on a signal light 100 feet before they make a left-hand turn.
That's correct.
So if somebody's traveling even 10 miles an hour, how long is that? 2 seconds? So even if he cuts on his signal light for 2 seconds before he makes that left-hand turn, there was no way your man could have stopped once he committed to that left-hand lane.
The evidence was that it was about 50 feet. That he traveled less than 50 feet after he turned his signal on.
But even if it had been 50 feet more, there's no way you could stop that tractor trailer before
and
he would have hit.
If that had been the evidence, then it would be a different case. But that's not the evidence. It wasn't that he had gone in the left-hand lane. There was plenty of signal, and if he had slowed down, if it had been that long, he would have been able to slow.
You think so? You think another 50 feet, he could have stopped?
I don't know whether he could have stopped, but he
couldn't have. Even after he hit the guy, he went 93 feet.
He couldn't have stopped, but he could certainly have slowed down.
It's a fully loaded 18-wheeler, is that right?
Yes, sir, 77,000 pounds. And that does exert a lot of force.
Well,
but
help me out with this one fact. If he weren't in a no-passing zone, it sounds like the logic of your argument would be pretty persuasive. Doesn't that change things?
I don't see how it would change things, because no-passing zone... Again, the risks posed, the law says you look at the risks. It's actions in the face of a known risk. The risks of a no-passing zone are not the same. Someone can turn left anytime. It doesn't have to be a no-passing zone. The risk of being in a no-passing zone is oncoming traffic.
But the point is, in a no-passing zone, it's not that you can't be there. You can't pass a guy. And the reason you can't pass the guy, in part, is so the guy doesn't turn into you. In part, there are more important reasons for no passing zones, but I don't know why that doesn't change the matrix of this case.
Because I still don't think that takes it into the realm of a known risk with probable consequences. The risk of someone turning left without signaling, I would submit, is remote, whether it's in a passing zone or a no passing zone.
And that's where I keep coming back. Honestly, to me, the important thing in the matrix is the idea that someone might be passing left. If their house is on the left-hand side, I don't understand why you would just assume that nobody would be turning left when they slowed down 500 feet in front of you in the first.
I don't know that you should assume that no one is turning left, but I certainly don't think you should assume or the law should place a burden that you have to assume that everyone is turning left, or that it's probable.
No, you don't.
Or that it's probable they're going to turn
left. Well, I don't know. I guess the question becomes one of, would it be advisable to, like, slow down and see whether this person is turning before you get over in that left lane in a situation where you're completely committed to not being able to get out of it?
And from a negligence standpoint, I think that analysis is proper. From a criminal negligence, I don't think it comes anywhere close to satisfying the burden. I wanted to reserve some time, but I'm over. So, thank you.
First, on the issue of the standard, the claim is that the trial court determined that this was a dangerous instrumentality, the tractor trailer, and that ordinary negligence would be sufficient to establish the criminal negligence and involuntary manslaughter under those conditions. What the court did say was that Sly needed to use a different standard of care. It didn't say the court had to use a different standard of care, but that somebody in his situation would have to do that. And that language is not very different from the language in Richardson, one of this court's cases, where, again, it was a tractor trailer. And the court said that in somebody driving, when one's driving a tractor trailer like that, the driving requires greater caution for the safety of others. So I don't think there's any difference in the standard. In fact, the Court of Appeals said that they hadn't employed the dangerous instrumentality standard and hadn't found simple negligence, but it just recognized that as the Court had recognized before, that the danger of an instrument is something that you would consider when you're evaluating whether or not there was a reckless disregard for life.
Well, Mr. Murphy, I can see that, again, in the negligence civil negligence context, but the Court of Appeals in Chung says Chung is more culpable than the typical driver in this case due to the fact that he disregarded the risk that he would fall asleep while driving a bus, and they focus on the bus part. But in a criminal negligence context, I mean, this concerns me when you say he's more culpable because he's more criminally culpable because he drives a bus, or he's more criminally culpable because he drives a tractor trailer than somebody who drives another car.
I don't think
it's a different. It seems to me we're expressing a different criminal liability standpoint because of the car that you're driving or the.
Your Honor, what I think the courts are doing is saying, look, we have to make a determination whether there is a disregard for human life. One of the things that should go into the equation is what were the dangers that he was operating under. If he is driving a tractor trailer, will he have to take more care because he won't be able to maneuver the vehicle very quickly, that the vehicle will be more dangerous to other persons? As I said in Richardson, he has a duty to exercise more caution when, in fact, he is in a situation like that. I think all the saying is that when you're looking...
But criminal negligence is not about how much caution you're exercising. It's whether you have a complete disregard for human life.
Yes, sure. And, of course, the trial court found that here. The trial court found that, and the only question is, did it do that by including in the equation the fact that this was a fully loaded tractor trailer on a small road where it would be very difficult to get out of a situation if, in fact, it became dangerous. That, in fact, when you're thinking about driving a tractor trailer through a small area like this, without any knowledge of what the car in front of you plans to do, you have to take more care because of the fact that if you...
Right, but that's not what Chung says. Chung says you're more culpable than the typical driver.
I'm not sure what that means either. I don't know what that means. I think the way they interpreted it here was that it's something you could take into. He's not more culpable than somebody else, but in fact, you've established here, as you have in other cases, that in fact he was guilty of having disregard for human life. That the only question is that there? And one of the ways you can find that is, in fact, that he did if somebody, I think the Court of Appeals said, if one of the issues is a display of indifference to people's safety, if someone's coming down the road on a bicycle, it's very different from coming down the road in a tractor trailer. That the kind of indifference that you have with a bicycle is not going to endanger people's lives, but it might very well do it in a situation like this, where you have a tractor trailer, which, as you know, as the defense expert pointed out, had a tremendous amount of force, 25 times the force of a 3,000-pound car, or was involved in this tractor trailer. And then there's some discussion in the defense brief that they didn't explain why it made a difference. But in fact, it's the force with which you are moving along that requires that you act with more caution. And that your failure to do that can certainly be considered in terms of whether or not...
Well, then again, it sounds like if you're driving 70 in a 35 in a car, that may not be criminally negligent. But if you're driving 70 in a tractor trailer, it is. When I thought the focus is supposed to be on the driver showing a reckless disregard of life. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. But I think what the Court of Appeals cases and Richardson have said, that when you have, because in Richardson they said because of the force, because of the weight, and because of the difficulty in maneuvering, you have to take more care. Now, you're not more guilty, but in fact, what they say is you may have to do some things that you would not have to do if you were driving a smaller vehicle, that you could maneuver more quickly, and that wouldn't cause the devastating impact.
So again, the conclusion is, if I were on a bicycle and I went around the guy, that's not a good example, but if I'm in a car and I break the law by passing, etc., that may not rise to the level of criminal negligence. But if I'm in a tractor trailer, I better not break the law, because that does rise to the level of criminal negligence.
I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think here the question was, what kind of danger did this driver create by driving down, coming up behind somebody who was either going very slowly?
Okay, but where in the elements of criminal negligence is it what kind of danger he creates? I mean, where is that in the equation?
Well, if he creates a dangerous situation which demonstrates a disregard for human life, that is, the more dangerous the situation that you create through your own actions demonstrates this disregard. And here, as we said, he knows that this person in front of him probably is not sure what he's doing. I mean, he's driving along, and he's either stopped or moving very slowly. The rock residence is on the left.
But didn't he anticipate the possibility, arguably, perhaps, a likelihood that the victim's going to turn off into one of the driveways by blasting the horn? Isn't that saying, look, don't even think about doing what I'm thinking you might do? And he blasts it. Now the question is, what does that blast mean? That blast means, because I'm coming through whether you do it or not, so I advise you not to get in my way.
Well, that's what the Court of Appeals found on the basis of the statements.
And could the trial judge, sitting as fact finder, not interpret it that way, given the facts of the case?
I think he certainly could. I mean, the point was that he was going to go through. I mean, the fact is that he turned into what became the no-passing zone. I think that indicates that he's going to do whatever he has to get around, continue on his journey. And the fact that it's a no-passing lane also means it's more likely that somebody would make that turn if there's no traffic coming on, without being concerned about traffic coming up behind
you. Part of the reason you shouldn't pass.
Yes, Ron. So I think that what the defendant did was, with a very heavily loaded tractor trailer, having no idea what the man was going to do, he might have been, clearly was looking for something if it's moving along slowly. If he's looking for something in an area with residences, one of the seriously probable events is that he will make a left turn. And to say that he would not slow down, of course, if you look at the braking, as his own expert said, the brakes didn't lock until impact. So I think you may be correct, Justice Goodwin, that it would be very hard to stop this vehicle once he got into that lane and the turn was made. But the point was, he didn't slowed down. He slowed down very little. Don't forget, he said he was traveling 45 miles per hour. The Commonwealth expert, said that he was that the minimum speed after impact was 37 miles per hour. So it was not a substantial reduction in speed. He had plenty of time to stop. It was 911 feet from where he could see the car, see the spot where the accident occurred, and where he could proceed. So that 911 feet, the defense expert said you could stop within 300 or so feet if you were traveling at 55, and at 238 feet, I think, if you were traveling at 45 miles per hour, as the defendant said. So what you had was a situation where he could have stopped. He himself said, when he was talking on the phone in the jail, "I should have hung back." All he had to do was put on the brakes, slow down substantially, wait and see what was going to happen.
We haven't talked about it yet, though. But isn't it? Didn't the record show that he was talking on the phone at the time?
So
he's in the wrong lane, blasting a warning, "Get out of the way because I'm coming." He's going through a passing lane. There's potential, arguably probable potential, that it's going to be a left-hand turn. And he's talking on the phone.
Yes, sir. And his inattentiveness was demonstrated by the fact that he was followed for a mile and a half by a cruiser, which was trying to get around him. But could had the lights on.
Let me ask, what difference does that make?
Well, the fact that he's inattentive, again, demonstrates less, more of indifference to what's going on out on the road. That he is not paying attention. And again, I think maybe more attention is required when you're driving a fully loaded tractor trailer.
Mr. Murphy, let me ask you a question before your time runs out. We talk about, in a civil context, gross negligence. I think everybody would agree that criminal negligence is something higher than that.
Yes, sure.
And we just decided a case involving a Boy Scout youth leader, and whether or not there would be immunity for this drowning death.
Yes, sure. That's cited by defendant in this case.
And what we held was that because there was some diligence and care by attempting to rescue him, although the rescue efforts might have been inadequate or ineffectual, they were not insufficient as to constitute indifference and utter disregard for human life.
That's right.
So if the standard is higher than that, and the record in this case is that there was braking, there was the sounding of the horn, the evidence appears to be that he was within the speed limit, that he wasn't speeding.
Sure, that's correct.
So if you have all of those things, and the standard is higher than what we have in a civil gross negligence case, why is the evidence in this case going to satisfy
Your Honor, because it
wouldn't have satisfied in a civil case?
Because I would suggest that here there is no due diligence. If you look at the case you're discussing, I think there's a whole paragraph of all the reasons why the defendant had taken steps to avoid what happened. He had told him to walk back in the same way that he had come. He had done various things. But most importantly, I think, here is that the defendant, and also unlike the police vehicle case, the Colby matter, there the officer had no idea that there was any problem in the intersection when he went through it and gave the warning signal. Here, the defendant sees this danger in front of him. He sees the vehicle that's driving very slowly, and he does nothing until it is too late. He swings on the very violent slingshot movement into the no passing lane, and at that point brakes, but brakes only when it's impossible to avoid the collision. He brakes at a time when he ends up stopping the where it said the brakes don't lock up until the impact itself. So he didn't apply the brakes before a collision was unavoidable. And as I said, the sounding of the horn can be...
Your view seems to me and you may be right, that the facts in the case and the inferences that you derive from them are to be interpreted in light of the Commonwealth, they prevail below.
Yes, sir.
So, for example, what did the horn mean? Well, it might have meant two different things.
Yes, sir.
So that doesn't count. What did the ineffectual breaking mean when you'd already put yourself in a situation where it wouldn't make any difference anyway?
Yes, sir.
So is it fair to say that your position is that this is a factual call and the trial court is entitled to make this call?
Surely not. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's the bottom line.
Yes, sir.
All right.
And unless there are any further questions, I rely upon request that the decision be made. Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal. You had 15 seconds. Make the best of it.
To address your question, Chief, I don't think there were sufficient facts that they could possibly have concluded that. A warning is a warning, regardless of whether you're saying, get out of my way, or I'm coming through. It's still a warning. And I think that takes it out.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.